And welcome to another Adventures into Sovereignty show. We're just so glad to have everybody join us tonight. And this is your one host, your host, Rebecca Cope, will be here tonight. And I am joined by Dr. Christina Winsey, who will begin to be my co-host on these shows. And Dr. Winsey is on a mission to facilitate healing and transformation on this planet. After 20-plus years practicing holistic medicine as a massage therapist and then as a chiropractic physician, Dr. Chris became a certified addictionologist, stress management, and mind-body medicine expert. So as you can see, we're also going to be doing, as we get started on this show, Adventures into Sovereignty with a healing focus also. Having been in long-term recovery from eating disorders herself, Dr. Chris was driven to share and help others addicted with food, weight, and body image challenges. She developed and founded her unique Power Up System coaching program to help clients find peace, sanity, and happiness through a variety of cutting-edge brain enhancement techniques, including specialized nutrition specifically for the brain. Her clients also lose weight, increase confidence, conquer addictive and negative habits, manage stress, and improve overall well-being. She's a keynote speaker, an author with Ken Blanchard, Les Brown, and Mark Victor Hansen, among others. She's a passionate promoter of natural and alternative medicine. And as a healing professional, Dr. Chris has always been helping people learn the truth about their choices in their health and health care options. After her personal experience with the court system and uncovering the corruption facing people today in all areas of their lives, she is devoted to educating everyone and anyone about natural law and natural health. Welcome, Dr. Christina.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. This is a thrill to be here, and especially for this evening with Rod Class and Sue Rhodes, and I'm just really, really thrilled to be part of this. I can't even say that enough.
Well, I tell you what, we have a really exciting series lined up for this whole season. You know, Christina and I have met and really lined up a lot of the programs that we'll be bringing you as we get this new season underway. We had quite an interesting year in 2014, and I'll cover a lot of that in just a few minutes, but we've got really lots of shows planned. Next week, we're going to bring Jenny Pippin and Wes Stearns on, and I'll be sending out an email next week dealing with some of their situation, and we're going to talk about a lot of the things that are going on in the foreclosure network right now, because there have been some breakthroughs.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's hard to deal with some of this stuff because we don't always know where we're going with it, but there have been some breakthroughs that are going to be really exciting. We're really right paying attention to that, and we'll be bringing those because we always want solutions along with all the problems that we're dealing with. So we'll be doing that. We want to have Dr. Paul Mitchell, another private attorney general who will be working with us on the IRS issues. We have Dr. Cordero, one of the lawyers who will be speaking with our group very soon, who is dealing with judicial corruption. And then we'll invite Sir John Walsh of Brana to come on and talk about the 800-year anniversary of the Magna Carta. So there's really lots coming up. So stay tuned for all of that. But of course, tonight we have to start off the new year to allow Rod Class to be here to give us an update on everything that has been going on with him. Most of you know that this man went through such an ordeal this past year that it's almost been incomprehensible to the 2,000 researchers who have been really following this case. It was a very, very, very intense time, and we're just so glad he's here with us tonight. So welcome, Rod. Let's say hello to you before we get started with more of the program here.
Hey, y'all. How you doing? Just hanging in here with what we're doing.
Yes, and we've really just, it's so interesting how Rod keeps learning so much and teaching all of us as we go. And we've had some major breakthroughs just this week. Some of the things that we're finding out that we'll be sharing with you tonight really takes us into a new level of understanding of everything that we've been through. And then we have Sue Rhodes. Sue Rhodes is on our team, and she is taking on the role of the Secretariat of the International Tribunal for Natural Justice, that we are working just nonstop with Sasha Stone and all the wonderful folks at New Earth Nation and our founding members of the Law Academy who've been working over the last year to get this program up and running. So, Sue, welcome to you tonight.
I'm afraid she fell off the call, Rebecca.
She fell off just as we got started. Oh, for Pete's sakes. All right. Well, I'm going to share my screen for just a minute here and see if I can bring you back in with one of the things that I want to share so that we get a sense of a little bit of where we're going. Is my screen showing, Christina?
It is, and
all right, fantastic. Yeah. Well, I'm just going to give you a sense of what we've been doing this year for just a few minutes, because as we talk about the International Tribunal for Natural Justice, we look at the definition of natural justice as fair play in action. And our major goal of 2014 was to determine exactly what form of law is actually in operation in the courtrooms of America today. And that is fact, not fiction. You know, what is it we're really dealing with? Because natural law and the consent of the governed are claimed to be the foundation of the American Declaration of Independence, Constitution, and Bill of Rights. And John Locke's natural law social contract supposedly replaced the old world governance doctrine of the divine right of kings put together by Thomas Hobbes. But did it really? We're going to come back and share with you just exactly what we discovered as we worked with Rod's case this particular year. Because we have two systems of the theory of law that we're dealing with, the law of God, which is natural law, versus the divine right of kings. Now, that's what was supposedly replaced by our Declaration and the Constitution. The divine right of kings is described as a group of beings who believe they have the authority to govern by violence, to impose their will on everyone else. And these are, in my opinion, imposter gods who believe they are above the rule of law, do not have to follow God's law, and are therefore not subject to universal law. And I want you to take that into your thinking cap for just a minute, because if these people believe that they are not subject to universal law because they have the consent of the governed, they've sort of put these two things together, then that bodes very, very dangerous for the people who aren't paying attention to what's going on as we share what we learned in the courts this year, or last year, actually. This second group imposed their will upon the American people through a forced takeover that has never been formally acknowledged. It is this takeover that Rod Class and his research team has documented and traced right down to the birth price put upon a baby's head at birth. The birth certificate with an SS number is proof that the Holy See has claimed the divine right to own the baby as chattel property. When we talk about the divine right to rule, we are definitely talking about this radical group within the Vatican who has attempted to take over. How did we, the people of America, become property, that is, slaves, of the Holy Roman See, the Vatican, and the city of Rome? How did we and our children get turned into volunteer slaves? What does this term mean in terms of canceling these hidden contracts that we're going to be talking about as we get into a lot of this through the years? And so if you don't believe that the SS stands for the Holy See, then I want to give you this information. Because the Social Security Act of 1935, Section 501 and 502, is exactly what Rod Class has on his screen as he does his seminar, that gets that birth price right down upon a baby's head and proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that we are chattel property, surety for the Holy See. Cedus Sacorum, the Holy See, the official mark on official documents. Its presence on a document, design, or uniform connects the object as having the full legal rights and effect of Roman law, a documented legal practice for over 700 years. Since the 17th century, the mark SS of the Holy See, this is moving a little too fast for me here, has been used on official legal documents issued under charter for lands owned by the Vatican. What is a fee simple on your land contract that goes right down to the fiefdom that shows us that somehow or another we have been brought back under the fiefdom of the divine right of these people who claim that they are kings to rule over us? The legal effect of the SS on any document signed by an individual, especially where consent is given, is to be treated as a person. It transfers temporal and often spiritual ownership to the SS, the Holy See. The most famous use of the SS was the insignia of the papal army of the Holy Inquisition, or the Nazi SS. We all know that. So what the heck is Roman law, and why are we saying that we are under Roman law today? Common name for canon law, a forgery first formed by the Roman cult in the 11th century, claiming certain fictitious ancient Roman maxims and precedents, which falsely place the Roman cult above all secular law. In other words, it doesn't matter, they're claiming the authority. Deliberately and falsely claimed by courts subservient to the curia of the Roman cult as pertaining to ancient Roman Empire laws, the main procedural foundations of the false Roman law was Venetian law, more commonly known, and if you will notice, I have specifically marked this in red, maritime law or admiralty law. Introduced in the 12th and 13th century during the creation of the highest legal personality under common law, the Holy See, and if you will notice how that is, C, also S-E-A-C. Under the corrupted Roman law, living men and women are considered vessels subject to jurisdiction of the sea, with the watermark of all nations with diplomatic recognition of the sea set at the highest mountain peaks. Hence, all land is therefore under the sea and property of the sea. Canaan law, then, is the law of the carpenter. Jesus, by default, canon law claims superior status above all other law. And then as a result of some of the research that Rod has pulled up this week, when he told me how the equity laws of this country and the laws had been put together under the federal rules of civil procedure, I went into the Cornell University Law School under the federal rules of civil procedure, and here are some of the things that I discovered. You know, Rule 2, one form of action, the notes of the Advisory Committee on Rules in 1937, and I want you to realize what I found in here. This rule modifies USC Title 28, suits in equity, when not sustainable, USC Title 28 and so forth, conferring the power on the Supreme Court to make rules of practice in equity, are unaffected insofar as they relate to the rule-making power in admiralty. What Rod has discovered this year is how the admiralty jurisdiction came into our land when we weren't looking. And as Franco Collins put together in his True History of America, Part 4, The Truth About Lincoln, Washington, and the Union. On his UKadia blog on December 10th, he had this to say. Do you really think there is anything lawful about admiralty? You have to be kidding. Admiralty law is founded on the legal and moral abomination that you are guilty until proven innocent. Admiralty law assumes the mere existence of a claim is sufficient to proceed an action without proof of such claim. Admiralty law permits you to be treated as property and your name as a trademark. I mean, if that is not the most perfect definition of the meaning of slavery, then I do not know what is. For admiralty law is the law of the slave owners, the slave traders, the pirates, and the bankers. And until enough people wake up, I mean really wake up, then this business model will only continue. Now, that just kind of sets the stage, because if I had not been one of those 2,000 researchers, and if I had not followed this case that Rod Class has been in, as detailed as we followed this during the year, actually it's been over about 20 months that we have all been involved in this, I would not have believed what it was possible to witness in the courtrooms of America. To say that the rule of law is no longer in operation is not even putting it in a, it's almost just beyond my imagination to be able to explain to you what we did see as we went through this case with Rod Class. But I invite you to help us out as a part of what we're going to do. We will have this letter posted on the Adventures into Sovereignty website under Breaking News, and we will make sure that you have the opportunity to read, and we ask you to send that letter to the officers of the court who have been so involved in the corruption that we have witnessed this year. I'm going to let Rod talk about that, but I'm going to remind you several times to please send this letter to those judges and officers before Rod goes again to this D.C. court on the 9th of February. So, Rod, let's talk about what you went through this year. I don't know about you, but it was the most intense, god-awful thing that I've ever been through with you as you were kidnapped and all of the other things that went down. Sort of give everybody a sense of what's going on and what you went through.
Well, we started out in this thing of walking through briefly with Judge Weapons when we started out with him. The issue came up about being under oath and perjury being involved. I said, so good, let's talk about perjury. I proceeded to explain to him about the perjury that was being committed by his prosecutor, at which point he pretty much agreed and then just shut the case down and set up for another status hearing. That was the first and last time I was before him. But the point is, we pointed out the perjury of the prosecutor. And he knew where we was going to go with that, so he didn't want to hear it anymore. Then we got with Kessler. And the problem we was running into is with the public defender's office. When we walked in to his office, they put me in the law library. And the first thing I did is on his 10-foot table, I started laying out all the books. I started explaining the law to him. And what we ran into is, well, what you're saying here is correct, but when we go across the street, it does not apply. We don't do it that way. But when we was asking him about what the jurisdiction of the court is, what the rules are, he could never give me a straight answer. And I haven't got a straight answer as of today from him. Because the more you talk to him, the more he gets dumbfounded. I just don't understand. You know, I just don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, you know, and it makes you feel that you're dealing with somebody that is totally inept, and he's supposed to represent us in court. But the more we got into pushing all of the different issues, because, ladies and gentlemen, we pushed anything from the Constitution to congressional acts to the statutes of large, to the Code of Federal Regulations, United States Code, but we was pushing in the bankruptcy of 1933. We put in the Social Security Act of 1935. We put in that the fact that these people are under international law, the International Organization Immunities Act of 1945, they relinked their national citizenship under Title 8 U.S. Code 1481. So these people aren't even American citizens. We went back and proved this. We went back and proved the issue that they're dealing with the War Powers Act. Because we went back and we challenged, where does the court have criminal jurisdiction? And like Rebecca pointed up here, under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, there is but one course of action. That's civil. And see, ladies and gentlemen, that also goes under equity. Equity has one course of action, civil. There is no criminal action, even under their own criminal rules, because it does not give them jurisdiction. And if you go back in and you look up in your own state under criminal procedure, you will see that it has venue. You will see that it has penalties. Now, what is missing here? If you got venue and you got penalties, what's missing? Jurisdiction. And what we've discovered is it goes back and says it is placed on pause until it is codified. In other words, they have not sat down passed law yet for it to be even codified. So what we've discovered is going back in under Title 50 under War and National Defense, it sits here and says under Chapter 3, Section 23, the court shall have jurisdiction and the judges shall have it. And as you read it, it gives a criminal jurisdiction against alien enemy residents. And it's only for disturbing peace. This is where the foundation comes in from. And recently we discovered in the statutes at large under 1798, an act respecting alien enemies. This was during the French-American War. At this time period is when the court got criminal jurisdiction. It was against enemies of the state. Because the French was fighting us, so they had criminal jurisdiction, but that went all the way down to your county court. That wasn't just a federal court. That went down into your neighborhood court for a judge to come in and try enemies of the state. And this falls back to that Title 50, Chapter 3, Section 23. These are some of the things that we have been laying into this court case. We've also brought in Supreme Court decisions. We went back and showed under Heller versus D.C., that the law by the Supreme Court was declared unconstitutional. And what it dealt with was either those who were mentally incompetent or someone walking into a federal building with a pistol or rifle and what they call a firearm, which is not the right terminology. We got into that. But you couldn't walk with a pistol or a rifle into a federal building. This is what the Heller case was about. But this went right back into McDonald's case versus Chicago, which went back in and supported that the D.C. laws were unconstitutional. Well, here in July of 2014, it was Judge Scully out of the Federal District Court right there in District of Columbia. Palmer was one of the defendants in the Parker case and Heller case that actually brought a lawsuit. It took him 5 years. They finally brought him in. Judge Scully went back and ruled that D.C. laws were totally unconstitutional. Now, we've got a problem here because they're wanting to sit here and say that the Capitol Hill ground is not D.C. Well, I'm sorry, anything within a 10-mile square is part of D.C., and the Capitol Hill ground is part of that D.C. But even under their own regulations, under Title 18, Section 930, it says they had to have it posted. There had to be signs. You had to be warned. There had to be a yellow mark. There had to be a red mark. There had to be a barrier that you walk through. It says, this here on this side is Capitol Hill ground, and anything on this side is D.C., and when you got it like this, it's flipped around. There is no distinguishing the issue here. Well, here in November, whenever I was in court, Judge Scully came back and made a ruling that D.C. law was unconstitutional. He came back in December and held D.C. in contempt for this. These were some of the issues that I was bringing up for Judge Roberts, because when they went back and made that ruling, I was supposed to have been in court on October 27th. I got an email telling me that they held a brand new grand jury on me on the 23rd or 24th of October. It got filed. It said, I said I had a 30-day leave. Well, stop and think. Let's talk about this logically. If they're going to do a brand new indictment on you, and you got a brand new arraignment, and you got a brand new court hearing, that means that first set of charges has to be dismissed. They were dismissed because we got a different case number. I wasn't told any of this whenever I was kidnapped off the road and drug up there, because what I did is they caught me up here in Salisbury at the VA hospital. I was in there getting some work done on my teeth, and the guards at the federal building stopped me. Salisbury Sheriff Department come up, pick me up, or police department picked me up, took me down to the local jail. And from that time, I was on a bus or a van going from jail to jail for about 3 or 4 days until the U.S. Marshals finally come down and took me up to D.C. that Monday. Well, I was in court on the, November 4th. I was in court. The prosecutor brought up, Mr. Clast, you are being charged because you failed to sit down and appear on October 27th. Oh, by the way, while we're here, we're going to do a new arraignment on you because we got a brand new hearing on you.
Yes. Yeah, because what they're basically saying is that you had taken this case as far as they were going to allow you to go. You had absolutely proved their abuse of their own rules to the point where they literally closed this case down and then started another one and then kidnapped you, and you weren't told any of this. None of us knew what was going on when you had been kidnapped. And then when you came in there, here's the Supreme Court ruling that came down while you were in there. Nobody told you about this. This public defender did not tell you any of this. You know, the people who went up to be witnesses from our group were not even allowed to see you. You were kept without your hearing aids. I mean, this was the most unbelievable abuse for somebody who had not committed any crime. Now, y'all have to realize that he was charged with a situation that could have put him in jail for 5 years or a $250,000 fine. We are not talking something simple here. We're talking about a citation for a violation that has been ruled unconstitutional. He was charged as if he had some type of weapon on his person in his possession. I think it was, they said something like readily available, when you had your pistol locked up in your car with your concealed carry permit, and it was nowhere near in your possession readily available, correct?
Correct. See, that was the issue here, because when we got into D.C., I was up there filing paperwork with the Judiciary Committee on the House and Senate side to get a new PAG bounty hunter document signed for my second document, so I could walk into court and show that I've got two certifications from the Congress on the House and Senate side that I hold this position.
Would you explain to our audience what PAG means, Rod?
All right, PAG is a private attorney general. What this is, ladies and gentlemen, in 1866, Congress passed an act of protecting the people of the United States and their civil rights as a means of vindication. That's the title of it from 1866. What this got converted over to is under Title 42, 1988. These are the Title 42 suits under health and welfare of the USC codes. This allows you and I to bring claims against their side for abuse and misuse of that power. And this is what I was up here for. I was up here getting the paperwork so I could walk into any federal court or any court in this country, show their credentials, and start pushing this on what we're doing. But see, I also hold position as a bounty hunter under the 14th Amendment under Section 4. But I also hold it under the Bounty Hunter Responsibility Act of 1999 and 2005. And this falls under Title 42, 1983 for civil rights violation for anything under color of law under Title 18, 241, 242. You and I were given this authority by Congress to go back in and do accountability on these people if we knew how to go use it.
Yes, but now what they have done is to totally keep us from being able to do that, and they have done it in the most ridiculous way, because what we began to understand as we were going through this case with you and we started digging into the War Powers Act and tracing this down to 50 U.S.C. Section 3, and we saw as a breach of the peace, we still couldn't figure out how you were being charged as a war criminal here in the United States. It took us a long time to be able to get the full understanding that part of how this happened was that the Admiralty statutes that came in allowed them to treat us as a criminal slave, and anybody who could be indicted as a criminal automatically had no rights and no remedy in the law. Now, is this what you experienced while you were in this court case? No remedy and no law. No matter what we did, there was nothing that the rule of law was in operation in those courtrooms.
Well, this is it, because when I got up in front of Kessler and I was able to finally sit down and talk, because I fired AJ about three different times, and she finally sat down and said, okay, Mr. Kloss, you really need to have a public defender because you need to know the rules of law. You need to know the rules of court, the criminal rules, procedure, rules of evidence, local rules. And I said, okay. So I said, that isn't a problem for me. Well, the next time we had a status hearing, we went up before her, and she said, Mr. Kloss, okay, we're here to talk about your paperwork. I said, well, no, we're not. She says, why not? I says, because I never got my paperwork back from the clerk of court, because I sent it in with a envelope prepaid with stamps on it, with my address on it, and all they had to do was timestamp it, stick it in the envelope, and send it back to me. I have not got one single document back from these people at this time. I says, but while we're here, let's sit here and talk about the rules of court, because you told me I had to know the rules. I says, but first off, let's sit here and talk about under Title 28, under 2255, under habeas corpus. Who is the injured party in this court case? She says, well, I don't understand what you're talking about. I says, who is the habeas corpus? And she looked at the prosecutor. The prosecutor, I don't know what a habeas corpus is. I says, come on now. I said, I didn't go to law school. I know what a habeas corpus is. She said, well, Mr. Kloss, you violated the statute. I says, well, wait a minute. I says, you telling me that the statute is the habeas corpus? She says, well, yes. I said, do you really want to tell me this? And she said, well, Mr. Kloss, you violated the statutes. I says, good. Let's talk about the statutes that your prosecutor sitting here and broke. I says, first off, let's get back into that Title 28, 2255 of habeas corpus. It says if I can sit here and show you a constitutional violation or a statutory violation, you have to dismiss my case. Let's talk about Article 4, Section 1 and Section 2 of the Constitution. full faith and credit from one state to the next. You've got to give me the same rights up in D.C. as what North Carolina gave me. I got a carry concealed permit. I'm allowed to carry under the Constitution. Let you and I talk to 14th Amendment, Section 1, full faith and credit from one state to the next. You can't abridge. Let's talk Title 42, 1981, under equal protection under the law. And I said, now, this is the constitutional statutory side of my rights. Let's sit here and talk about the violations that your prosecutor did. Let's talk about Title 36, Chapter 705, Section 70503, disqualification. This man failed to uphold the Constitution. This man has failed to uphold the statutory law in this state. Your gun laws have already been declared unconstitutional. It is a fact that this man had just violated the Smith Act of 1940. He's committed treason. He has violated Title 18, Chapter 115, Section 2385, which is insurrection, rebellion, sedition. Why is this man still sitting in this courtroom?
Rod, yeah, this is the most important thing that I really want people to understand. This is one of the first cases that I am aware of where somebody knows the rules of the court enough for us to be able to document with great detail exactly what these people have come in there and done in violation of their own rules. And what is due process? You know, the definition of due process, a lot of times we think that that's our due process rights that are in violation, but what due process rights really do is say that that court has to be held to a high standard of following its own rules and its own regulations. And what we witnessed throughout this whole trial was that they did not follow any of their rules and regulations, no matter how much Rod Class was able to point out what they had done. They just continued to mow this down. There was such arrogance on the part of the court, both the judges and the prosecutor, and such incompetence on the part of the public defender, that we were just absolutely astounded. Now, it's one thing. I mean, there are so many people who do have problems when it comes to dealing with the courts. And if you have people that you're looking at and you want people to understand that you have had anything but a fair trial, this is a good video for them to share. Because what we have been able to find out is Rod was able to show what the rules were, how much they were violated. If you think that there is not a correlation between the fact that we have more people in prison in the United States of America than any other country on the face of the earth, then this is the reason why. China has a population of like 1.3 billion. They only have about 1 million people in jail total population. We have 300 million, and we have over 2.2 million in jail, plus at least another 5 million on probation in dealing with all of this stuff, even though our population is that small. So there is a major problem here that we really are dealing with. So Rod, this is part of the reason why we have been working nonstop to bring this International Tribunal for Natural Justice in, because we found that there was no such thing as the rule of law in operation. So let's bring Sue in right quick. I see Sue's face up there. We didn't get to introduce you a few minutes ago, Sue. I'm going to let you say hello, and then we'll finish with Rod, and then Christina is going to get some more information about what you have learned as we're working together with the International Tribunal. So say hello to everybody.
Can you hear us, Sue?
I can now. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to stay on. This laptop is not cooperating tonight.
Okay.
But I'm here now.
Okay. Fantastic.
Tell us about you, Sue.
I was in the law field for about 15 years as an assistant. Then I moved up to kind of paralegal stuff. And about year 12, I started figuring out something wasn't right. anyway, I left the field and decided that either I was going to do something else or find a way to get involved with something to help make the system better. And then I found New Earth Nation. So that's where I'm at now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Anyway, there was one time I saw, there were two of the attorneys that I worked for, high-fived each other in the hallway after
After what?
Read your old lady out of home.
I'm afraid you're stalling out.
A foreclosure. And that was it for me. I was done. I'm trying to stay on here.
Okay, so what... Okay. Yeah. All right. What I heard her say was that two of the attorneys were high-fiving in the hallway because they had been able to kick an 80-year-old lady out of her home. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Sue, are you back on?
Yeah, they made a lot of money off of stuff like that. Yeah, they made a lot of money off of stuff like that, and they didn't care, you know. And I just looked at them. I couldn't believe how heartless they were.
Good.
And I cannot support this kind of stuff, you know.
And so what did that lead you to?
So I got out I just had to get out of it. I couldn't take it anymore. So anyway, I found New Earth Nation has just popped up, and here I am. And now I'm working with the Tribunal for Natural Justice, and we're moving forward and having a good time at it too, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
We are.
And I think, you know,
it's a lot of fun.
Well, the point that I think is so important is that we all, each of us, has to take responsibility to make a change in this world. And, oh, we just lost Sue.
All right.
But, you know, Rod, what you went through is so, the truth is stranger than fiction. People don't want to believe that this is really going on in our country or in the world. And what's really going on right now, and why we're going to be talking, if Sue can get back on, we want to talk more about this tribunal, is that we as a people have to, as Rebecca's favorite phrase, non-action is no longer an option. We all have to stand up. And you were talking, Rod, about the fact that we, the people, actually have the authority to question and to hold accountable the people that are supposedly public servants, which aren't public servants. They are employees of the United States Corporation and employees of each state that is a corporation. And so we as a people have to educate ourselves, and we have to take action no matter what we're facing. And it's just that's what this tribunal is about. That's what everything we want to bring on this show for people to understand, whether it has to do with coming up against the pharmaceutical giants that are trying to pollute our bodies continually with drugs, 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 drugs. They're polluting our kids. They're polluting our elderly. I can't even believe what's going on with the commercials now for pharmaceuticals, for this, that, and every other thing. So it's permeating into every area of our lives. So, Rod, my hat is so off to you for what you're doing to bring this to the public, and what we're going to do with the tribunal. It's just everybody has to get involved in some way, and that's some of the things we're going to be talking about is how people can help themselves, because I think getting people involved has to do with, if you have a problem with a foreclosure, if you have a problem with child support, if you have a problem with this, that, or the other thing, maybe, you know, even down to the medical, where you want to do alternative health for your child who has cancer, and the AMA is coming in and calling you a criminal, and they want to take your child away because you want natural health and you don't want to do chemo and radiation. I mean, all of these things are tied together. Trying to control us and trying to make us afraid to branch out and do what we need to do for ourselves. And the more we conquer fear, I can't even imagine the courage it's taken you, Rod. is just unimaginable courage what you have shown, and you've led a path for so many other people, and we want to get more and more and more people to wake up and get involved.
Well, you're going to have to. That's the bottom line. And it's like I keep telling people, I'm a Vietnam vet. I have an issue here. My son was in Iraq, was in the Gulf War. You don't send us overseas to go die for somebody else's freedom and say, we have to die for their freedom. But when we come home, we got to keep our mouth shut. And if I'm going to die, I'm going to die in my own backyard. Mm-hmm. Not for somebody else's, but for ours. And this has been my philosophy, because when I first got involved in this, the gentleman that taught me back in 2001, him and I had a conversation on the first ticket that I got. And I told him what was going on. He said, what do you want to do about it? I said, I want to take him out in the back 40 or out behind the woodshed, and I want to hang him. And he said, we want to sit down and make examples out of them. He says, you realize the risk? I says, yes, I do. He says, I said, I could die out of this. I said, I could have died overseas. I said, no, dying is dying no matter where you do it at. But at least here, I'm fighting for my own backyard and I'm fighting for my own freedom. I'm not doing it for somebody else. And the thing of it is, a lot of people don't have that mentality. You've got to be able to walk into this knowing that you can risk everything and lose everything. And if you're not willing to sit down and risk and lose, then you're not willing to sit down and fight these people on what it takes. And that's exactly what it takes. And I got the military mentality to go push this.
And Rod, one of the things that people can do to join us, it is a simple action step that you can take right now, and that is to let these judges and the prosecutors and these people in Washington, D.C. know that we are paying attention to this case, and you can just send a letter to these judges to let them know. You know, we've given you a lot of the information. We're putting up now on the International Tribunal site, we're putting up all of the documentation with Rod's case. And what we're going to be doing, we are just diligently working behind the scenes. We have a team of about 25 or 30 who are working on all of these things as we speak. We're putting together Rod's source documents. And what you are going to find is that these source documents have led to this sorcery through the birth certificate. And when I say that non-action is no longer an option, it's because these jokers who have taken over our government, and we'll be showing you exactly how that was done through the congressional records, through the legislative acts, and through the speeches of all these congressmen who tried to warn Americans what was going on 100 years ago. We're going to take you through this, and we will be able to prove to you exactly how they took over without ever firing a shot, put admiralty slavery law in on us, and then looked at it and flaunted their nose at the universal laws, the same as these judges flaunted their nose at the Supreme Court decision that said that the citation that Rod was used to try to hang him in Washington, D.C. was unconstitutional. Well, the same thing here. Because they have you under lock and key, they think that they have your consent because you signed that Social Security form, your mother signed the birth certificate, the birth event, which is different from the birth certificate that they used to enslave you and then put a birth price on your head. All of these things say, oh, you consented. We don't have to worry about your free will because we bound your free will because you consented. Therefore, you're under universal law. You can't say we did this to you. You consented to it. So as we begin to learn this, then that's where we say non-consent is not an option, because you're going to have to find a way to unbind those contracts. That's going to be a big part of what we're going to do as we put all of these programs together this year.
Well, this is where this art of war comes in. That's done back in China, back many thousand years ago. The art of war is understanding your enemy.
Yes.
Coming back in and understand what they've done, how they've done. And this is what we've learned on the administrative side. We're going after them administratively. We've learned to use the SF-95s as a tool for a tort claim. We learn how to come back in and start stripping them of their immunity. We're learning how to take them into court, because most of your Title 42 suits, 1988, is that you went after them while they were still in public office. Under the SF-95 setup, under the administrative, you're going to that agency and asking them to reprimand their own, knowing that they will not. That's the whole function of this. They will not reprimand their own. So now they're giving you the authority to come back in and take them to task, because they threw them under the bus. This is what I'm sitting here saying. We're using military mentality here. We're using guerrilla warfare. We're coming back in, and we're using their own rules and regulations against them. And it hasn't been done on this scale. And nobody's ever done it on this level until here recently.
So, like and I said, that is why we're asking. Okay? That's why we're asking people to participate by sending the letters and letting people know that we really are paying attention to this. No question about it. And, Christina, we'd better bring Sue back in while she's in here. Let's talk about this international tribunal a little bit, because we haven't had a chance to really touch on that much tonight.
Welcome back, Sue.
Yeah, I'm here for a minute.
Great. Well, tell us, what is a tribunal?
A tribunal is a gathering of people that have set aside some rules and procedures that they want to go through. They see a problem that needs to be solved. Normally, it's something humanitarian. There's either war crimes, crimes against humanity, that type of thing going on. In history, though, from what I've found out when I go back, governments and politics have been involved. And that seems to be what keeps things from moving. It keeps funding from coming in that needs to be coming in. It keeps laws that would normally be brought in by the people out because the politicians won't get reelected or whatever. And once you bring politics into the mix, you've got now 10 different ways you can go with a tribunal. So, and then you've got governments involved too, and they all have different laws. Portugal has a different law than Italy and all of this stuff. So what's genocide to one country is not to another. So what happens is, the remedy that they're supposed to be getting, that they want to get, the politicians are getting in the way, and so are the government. So anyway, the International Tribunal for Natural Justice seeks to get the people in. It will be people powered, without the governments, without the politics involved, and we will be able to move forward as people doing what we think is right and going by natural law.
And
can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes, thank you.
Good. Great.
And how is the tribunal being formed? Who is taking part in the tribunal?
Right now we have volunteers from all over the world. We have some attorneys. We have people like me who have worked in the legal field. We have people that have just been researchers. We have RODS researchers. And we're getting more by the day as word gets out that this is the type of thing we want to attempt to do. And we will do it, because we've got RODS source documents as our first case, and that is something that's going to get a lot of attention from the people. So once, and the more people, you know, they can pick us off one or two at a time, but they can't pick us off thousands at a time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
that's absolutely.
Right. So, she's gone again. What she just said is what I've been wanting to say is so important, that You mentioned, Rebecca, that there have been some breakthroughs lately in the foreclosure cases, and that Yes. some of the things are changing. slowly, but they are changing. And I attribute that to the fact that too many people are screaming. And I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean it in a good way. And this,
yes,
this is why non-action is not an option. When all of us stand up and imitate Rod Class, you don't have to understand the law the way Rod Class does. You don't have to do the kind of study. He's already done the study. The 2,000 researchers have already studied. What you need to do is take up the cause and be part of fighting what's going on through remedies that make sense. So that enough voices, I mean, if it weren't for the number of people saying, this is a fraudulent foreclosure, this is a fraudulent child support case, this is a fraudulent this, that, or the other thing, if people aren't standing up and fighting the fraud and the corruption as a group, then it is one or two that they're picking off. And they tried to pick Rod off, and they're still trying to pick Rod off. But too many people are screaming loudly, we need more. We need everybody to be doing something in making a difference here. And whether it's your own situation or getting involved in the tribunal, and I know, Rebecca, you're going to be talking about things that they can do, action steps that they can take, no matter what it is. Every single day, every single week, there are action steps people can take.
Yes, and really just one of the most important things is the educational phase, because government, if you break the word down, you've got gubernare to control means the mind. Government is all about controlling the minds. They've bought up our textbook printers. They've bought up our TV stations. They've done a really good job of controlling. Right now, we're the ones who are really under siege. And Rod, I'll bring you back in here because you've been so active in helping us get this tribunal up and running. Why do you see it being such an absolutely critical need of what we're doing here in America at this point in time?
Where I've learned and what I have found is where I differ at. A lot of the old stuff, people could not back and support anything. They would sit down and they would tell you, well, you're not a person. You know, whenever you're going and you're a corporation or you're not that individual. Okay, well, show me where this stuff is at in the law. And this is what we've done. We've learned to go back and research the history of this stuff. We learned to be able to walk in. It's like when I was up before Kessler and we started talking about the rules of evidence. And I walked her through 402, 501, 802, 902. And the moment we got into 902, a prima facie law, I proceeded to explain to her under statutes at large, volume 43, stopped on March 4th, 1925. Volume 44 picked up on December 16th, 1925. Supposedly, the House Bill 10,000 was passed on December 7th, 1925, but there was no listing because it stopped on March 4th and picked up on December 16th. But then we started to explain to her that here it is that your USC codes were prima facie. They are presumption. They were never passed by Congress. Actually, you want to see the documentation. So it's one thing for me to sit back and say, well, they've never been passed. It's another thing for me to hand you the congressional records.
Yeah.
And this is what I've been working on. And this is why I see the need for the International Tribunal, because when we're walking before them, we are actually backing and supporting, which would give them a good foundation of what we're talking about and not making them look like a, you know, one of them type people, but we're actually walking in and saying, here's the proof, here's the evidence, here's the proof that the United States went from a government to state government to a federal government to a federal corporation to an international corporation. This is how they drug us from being a citizen where they turn around and turn us into enemies of the state, to where they put us on the market as slaves. Here are the congressional records. Don't take my word for this. here's the proof. And when you're walking into these courts here and you are addressing this and they don't want to because they don't have to tell you anything, this is why it is important that we would get a world court with the people in it. That's us. That's bringing this in. And people not doing this, but people like me being able to bring forth this information, be the prosecutor in this thing. Bring the evidence in, and if we need some of these international attorneys to assist us, let them assist us. Don't take over our case. Let them assist us. Let us teach them what they need to learn, because from what we're learning here, they're only taught theory and concept. They're not taught law. They're not taught statutes. They're not taught intent, and that's what we've discovered. This is the issue. We had a gentleman up here in Ohio. Him and his wife were just arrested here last night. They had 40 stormtroopers that kicked in their doors and went into their home, drug them out in the middle of the night, took them down to the county jail. The police officer said, "You are a sovereign citizen." He said, "What makes me a sovereign citizen?" He says, "Because you believe in the Constitution of the United States. Because you believe in the Constitution, you're a sovereign." That's their explanation for us. That's how they look at us. And the thing is, he just got out. He went before a judge here today for his arraignment. I talked to him, and I said, when you get in there, I want you to ask the judge several questions. One, what's the jurisdiction of this court? Are we operating under diversified citizenship? Are we operating under law? Are we operating under equity in this thing? What are you running this court under? And he asked the judge, and the judge sat here and said, "We're running under law and equity at the same time, and we're running it under the Constitution." And he says, "Wait a minute." Carl said, "Wait a minute." He said, "You're running this under the Constitution?" He says, "Yes, we are." I said, "Man, you are running it as a sovereign." And the judge looked at him. I says, "Well, we was just accused of being a sovereign by your police department because we believe in the Constitution." He said, "Now we got a problem." And the judge looked at him and said, no, that isn't how this works. So this is how we're being profiled in this country. We've got a group of people that if we believe in God, we believe in our country, we believe in the Constitution, then we're terrorists. And that's how I've been classified, as a terrorist, and what we've done. Because I've been out on the list, because anytime my brother and I went down to the Ohio Supreme Court, we was on a terrorist profile list. And for us to go into the Ohio Supreme Court, we had to have this 6'6" state highway patrolman, about 300 pounds, walk with us as our bodyguard.
Well,
because what we started doing with him, we started teasing him. He says, "Why am I with you guys?" I said, "Well, you're here to keep the corruption away from us while we're doing our education."
Well, that's just unreal. We have Sue back, and Sue, as long as we've got you, we want to talk to you again. Could you tell us, on the heels of what Rod just said, what is the goal of the International Tribunal of Natural Justice, and why should people get involved? This is really important.
It is important. The goal is to expose the system for what it is. We have it in black and white, publicly, with as much public fanfare as we can. Identify these people who are committing these crimes on a daily basis and just raping and robbing the people blind. And then after all of that is said and done, enforce it. These people are committing crimes, and the more people that understand exactly how the system works, and Rod's done an excellent job of, and Rebecca too, of showing people how the system works. Once they see in a court setting that, yes, this is true, you know, if we can get more people involved, it's going to be a people-powered movement to also enforce the ruling of the court. And that's where the PAGs come in. Am I right, Rebecca, on that, and Rod? The
PAGs
will come in and help with that?
Yes. I'll mention one thing since you brought that up, Sue, because when we started talking about the PAG training back in, gosh, as we were getting all this project started, we talked about the PAG training being able to come into the courts to make sure that people were following the rule of law. And what we found was that the rule of law was so out, you know, it's so outrageously not happening that the PAGs will be trained to go before the international courts now to help the people who are bringing these cases. Their main job will be to help the people who will go before the international courts. So it's going to be an even bigger role that we'll be doing as we get further into this PAG training. We want Rod to get through all of the next step in the court here, and then we will hopefully be getting that training underway as we really are just focused on getting all of these various pieces put together for everybody this year. Our work seems to be never ending on all of this.
Well, see, with what
we need to find some psychiatrists too. So we can give these guys some psych. They need some psych evals. I'm telling you, they're insane. When I went through and Rebecca and I were going back and forth with the letter to the judge, I thought, this guy's insane. You know, he's blatantly going behind the Supreme Court, going behind their back and saying, no, I don't care about your rulings. This is my ruling, and I'm better than you, and I'm going to throw this guy in jail for something that you said that was unconstitutional. That's insane, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes.
It's insane. If we did that to them, we'd have a psych eval. We'd be thrown in the slammer with rubber walls, you know? Seriously. Yeah. So, you know, I was going through that thinking, these people are insane. They're psychotic. You know, yeah. It's horrible what they're doing to the people, and they're insane as they do it. So, psychiatrists, we could use a few of them.
Yeah, when you realize that they claim authority through violence. You know, these are the things we all have got to start paying more attention to. Their authority comes at the brunt of a gun. And what we'll be sharing with you next week is the heartbreaking story of how Wes and Jenny went through this foreclosure eviction, this beautiful home that they had lived in and that was Jenny's dream home, how they were absolutely surrounded by so many cops in flak jackets carrying assault rifles. We'll be sending some of this information out with our newsletter this week, but the biggest thing that we're doing is being as proactive as we know how to be too. So it's, you know, it's been an intense year, and as we put all of this stuff together, we've really got a lot of intense work as we put together solutions, because we're not just, you know, we're not just rolling over. We're saying our mantra loud and clear, non-action is no longer an option. And we really mean that, and we'll do everything we can to help people choose very, very wisely, because it's crazy out there. When you're dealing with psychopaths, you've got to do exactly what Rod's talking about. You've got to use every power that you can to know your enemy and to choose your battles very, very carefully.
Because the biggest thing that what has happened here is this. I have not injured anybody other than through paperwork. That right there is the biggest thing that they fear. I have fought them on a battlefield with paperwork, and they could not handle the paperwork. This is the type of warfare that
you have injured egos.
Yep. This is the warfare that we're in. Paper warfare with these people. We're in here to match intelligence for intelligence, wits for wits. And I tell you what, with what we've learned, it isn't going to be that hard to come back in and hammer them. Because once we can bring them before a tribunal and start questioning them on their jurisdiction, their job duties, their oath that they took, their rules, their regulations, and they can't answer this, this is why Rebecca and I talked, this needs to be an administrative first hearing. Do it administratively. Get them knocked out. Get them pulled out. go after their property, go after everything they own. This is the bounty hunter side of this. This is where two-thirds comes back in and pays off the public debt. One-third comes back to the finder for us coming in and bringing them in and hammering them. We don't keep everything. Two-thirds goes back. That comes under their 14th Amendment side of this thing. That's the purpose of this.
So I hope everybody really gets that we have spent this last 7-8 months here preparing the ground so that people will be able to understand and follow this. And when you follow it down into your pocketbook, when you see how that birth price was put on our head, and then how these judges and municipal people, all of these people who are really administrative agents for the Vatican and the Crown and the bankers are the ones who are doing the spoils of war against the people. When you really begin to watch this, then you're going to begin to have a different idea of what's been going on in this country for the last 100 years and how well we were set up for it. That's the most important thing that we hope to bring with these source documents so that you can really follow it and you are going to realize that the history that we were taught is not how it was, how everything came down. And so when you look at this natural law and you look at it, you know, the consent of the governed.
Rebecca, review once more really quickly what is natural law so that some people may have tuned in late, and I think it's really important that people just understand what is natural law.
You know, the simplest way to look at natural law is that these are the moral laws that we are really, you know, it's our conscience, it's common sense, there's nothing complicated, it's what we experience in nature. And the biggest thing, the biggest rule of natural law is do no harm. If you're not harming anybody, then that is just, you know, the simplest thing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. When it comes to the golden rule and when it comes to this idea that no one is above the rule of law, it's really that simple.
Yes.
It's even, I was reading a book by Henry Drummond, and he talks about, it's called Natural Law in a Spiritual World. And when I was doing a little research on natural law. And here's a quote from that I think really also. Newton did not discover gravity. That is not discovered yet. What he discovered is its law. And I thought, how simple.
Yeah.
How simple.
And yeah. And it is simple. It is so much simpler. And when you realize that this whole thing of do no harm has been turned upside down, and what the courts did to Rod Class and what the courts have done to so many people, which is why so many people have become volunteers and gotten involved with our law academy, is because they have been harmed. There has been real harm that has happened in this Rod Class case. There has been real harm in the thousands and millions of people who are incarcerated in these for-profit private prison systems. So there's really just a lot that we really need to be paying attention to.
If it wasn't on us, wasn't for the dollar value on us, we would not have a conviction rate in this country.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think what people really need to get is about the birth certificates is that they put a price on our heads. We are worth money to them as slaves. You know, they count on the money that they're going to make because we were born. That's really that. How basic can you get? And when you really get this stuff down to your core, it makes you so. It's a positive anger. You've got to get it down to your soul that this is so against what life should be like. I mean, I don't think there's anybody alive today that can't say, you know, something's just not right with the world. Something's not right with the way things are going. Something's not right with how we're governed. Something's not right with all of the things that we think we're free. We're told we're free, but we're not free. And once people study what Rod Class and people like him have done and what the International Tribunal is trying to do, and they really get it, I think we will have a swell of people, and that's why we have this show, Rebecca.
Yes, it is. And it's really going to be fun as we get into this over the year, as we bring in the health and sovereignty issues around GMOs and cancer and diets and, you know, vaccines and all of the things else that we'll be getting into.
Yes.
It really brings so many other things into it, because the law affects every single aspect of society. And that's why we have to start here. You know, we have to start by taking back responsibility and learning our own responsibility under natural law, so that we can make sure that we not only do no harm, we have to take proactive responsibility to make sure that we stop allowing these people who are posing as governments, who are really just, you know, they're the same as being employees of Walmart or McDonald's.
Yes.
Comes right down there, and you really understand who's in charge. They have no more authority than somebody from Walmart and McDonald's, and we're just allowing these people to walk all over us.
Well, one of the biggest things that we sit here and what we proved with Roger, he is a security exchange forensic auditor. We met him several years ago, and we talked about some of this stuff with him, and he thought we were sort of out there a little bit, but they started to do a foreclosure on him. His home at the time he bought it was worth $500,000. $500,000. His signature. By the time they sold his signature from this and went down to the different banks, that signature became worth $93 million for his signature. That's the slave side of this thing. His house was paid for the moment he sat here and signed that promissory note. But they turned around and sold his note. And this is what is now happening with the banking system. This is starting to be exposed. And this is what we're talking about with the court system. We get into it, we can have a tribunal get into the first hearing and start issuing subpoenas on the Chris account, on the QSIP account, start getting into the payroll side of this thing of how much money is being made off of each prisoner. Because the gentleman that I worked with here several years ago, his son was sitting in the county jail. And what they went back in, he got a law firm that worked out of Maryland and Virginia. It sat here and showed for a felony is worth $500,000 per quarter per charge. Yeah, six charges. Do the math for 3 years. That's how much money they made off this kid.
Wow.
It's all about this. It's about how they can turn us into slavery. This is human trafficking, people. This is, and the fact that these people are under the International Organization Immunities Act of 1945, and for those of you who have doubt, think back whenever Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and Arizona governor and legislators and the sheriff created the immigration law. Hillary Clinton did not take them to Congress. She took them up before the UN under the International Organization of Immunities Act and had them charged for a human rights violation. You're going to tell me these people aren't under the UN jurisdiction? Yes,
yep.
They are. This is why
yes, they are.
International court.
And this is what we'll be doing as we pull all of this together. I mean, Rod's work this year and our work with him has just turned up so much information. And I'm going to go ahead and close out with one particular thing that's going to make this absolutely beyond understanding from you. as I bring in one more of my screens here and just share this little bit of information that's going to pull this right down into what we've been talking about tonight so that you can look at this and say, oh my God. Here again, this is part of that story that Franco Collins put together on his blog, December 10th, the 14th. It is posted on the Adventures into Sovereignty site. You can find it right there, because I'm going to read you one thing here that really pulls this together. Any country or nation or regime that openly practiced slavery or endorsed any form of slavery in its laws should then, under international law, be held accountable by the International Courts of Justice at The Hague, as well as by the Security Council of the United Nations and by all civilized societies, as a paria state that if such leaders and government refuses to abolish all forms of slavery within its bound, must then be considered an enemy of civilized society, of the United Nations, and of the future of humanity. The very notion of slavery is not only immoral, but completely anti-Christian. When you consider the sacred scripture of Matthew 7, he states to the effect, all are equal before the law, and none are above it. Thus, to treat a fellow member of our species as a piece of property less than an animal is to be a heretic and apostate to the Christian faith. Any society that follows or endorses such laws against the teachings of Jesus could not possibly be considered a Christian society. Now, people, listen to this sentence. Sadly, there is one such state and country in existence today, only one out of 193 members of the United Nations, that not only endorses the notion of slavery in its laws, but has embedded it in its own constitution. Worse still, this regime considers slavery its divine and moral right, putting itself in direct opposition to all major religions and all history of civilized society and all forms of international law. Its own false constitution being a corruption to the original documents of its founders, this imposter regime considers that it has a legal right and commission to practice slavery across the planet, and not just within the bounds of the nation it holds hostage. Thus, this regime is the personification of the parasite and enemy number one to the survival of our species. This is what this regime inserted into its own fake constitution in 1864 without due process to make slavery a divine and moral right. And if you haven't figured out who I'm talking about right now, we were just talking about Rod's friend Carl asking which constitution the judge was following. It's because this is in our constitution that was substituted in 1864 when this rogue regime took over our country. Section 1, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude. Listen to this, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. If you are a criminal slave, then you lose all your rights as a slave, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Section 2, Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Now, did you read it correctly, or did you misread it as so many people are taught to do? Do these words abolish slavery forever, or do these words merely adapt slavery and refine slavery into a moral and legal right being even more perverse than prior to their drafting? Does it not state that slavery and involuntary servitude are to be used as punishment, and that criminals are to be the new term for slaves? Does it not also claim a mandate to pursue such antichrist thinking, not only within the United States, but to anywhere else they claim jurisdiction. So there you have it. The United States is the only country on the planet that explicitly states slavery as a moral and legal right by its constitution, in open defiance to the norms of civil society and the rest of the world. Now, that is just about something that blows me away, that we would have this kind of information coming into our country and that we were not able to see this. And this is exactly what we're doing, is we pull all of this information that Rod has pulled together for us this year. We're going to be able to prove this to you so that nobody who really is willing to do the study is going to be in any question as what's going on here. So I really just want to say thanks to Rod Class for all the work and for all this horrible stuff that he's had to go through this year. And for Christina and Sue and everybody who's joined us tonight listening in on the show, we hope you'll tune in and really stay with us as we put all of this material together this year, because you will find that non-action is no longer an option in a very big way. So, everybody wrap it up. Christina, you want to start?
Well, I do. I want to let everybody know that we are going to be, as you had mentioned, talking about GMOs, about cancer, about vaccines, and about how with these this whole control of the corrupt system, it's affecting your choice in health and health care and what you do for yourself and for your family. So really we're going to be focusing on not just whether you're in foreclosure or whether you have a court case about something that is non-health related, but it's actually about everything in your life. So we're going to be talking about a lot of that. And
yes,
yeah, it's going to be incredible.
Yes, it is. Okay, Rod, wrap it up for us.
Christine, with what you're saying, all boils back down to the court system allowing it and the attorneys misrepresenting it in a courtroom to protect the pharmaceutical companies.
Yes.
This is where the issue lies, because if we had justice in the courtroom through the lawyers and through the judges, the pharmaceutical companies could not get away with what they're doing with all the kickbacks to the system.
Yes.
This is the point. This is why this tribunal is so important, because if we would start targeting where the problem lies, a lot of this stuff would start dissipating, because once these pharmaceutical companies, once Child Services, once IRS learns that they will no longer be protected by their colleagues, we won't have the problem in this country anymore. And the medication that they're putting out, you will not see at the bottom of the screen. You may have this problem, but this is hazardous to your health. This could cause blood poisoning. This could cause heart attacks. You could have a stroke. But it does get away and get rid of your cough.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, and you're right. You're right, Rod. It all comes down to what happens in the courts, absolutely. And that's why every aspect of our lives is affected by what happens in the courts. And we're just going to be highlighting areas that touch people's lives, because I believe that we will get more people involved as we help them solve their individual problems. It's got to be personal. You know, people out there need help, and so we've got to find ways to provide them resources of information, just like, you know, you have done with uncovering all of this. So it's piece by piece, but it's every piece is important. But thank you.
All right, Sue, let's get you your final words, and we are really at the end of this show, so wrap it up for us.
Good night. I'm tired. we're going to get this going. So one way or the other, we're going to get this going.
Yes,
that we are. Thank you all for joining us for this first show of the season. It has been an absolute dynamite blast to be able to be on here with all of y'all. I thank you, and we'll see you again same time next week. We will send out information. Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.